I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
For today's episode, we're going to talk about yet another one of the foundation pillars for La Tribu, and that's fitness. I have as a guest Theo Bowie, who's a really good friend of mine. He's also one of our trainers here for us at Vigor Ground Fitness and Performance, and he's also a member of La Tribu. So I've had the pleasure, and I'm actually humbled to be a part of his journey and experience firsthand his growth from when he first started as an intern at Vigor through the various stages of his life to where he is now. He's got a little girl now. He just bought a house, and the constant growth is been great to see. But I appreciate him being open and candid with us to share a little bit about his struggles in high school with sports and health, and how that kind of took him to make certain decisions for his life. But I think the most important topic that we'll get into is one that a lot of people struggle with, and that's just finding your true self, finding your passion career, your passion job, and how people can get stuck and not continue to seek it out because they feel they're just never going to find it, or they feel that they just don't have the guidance or the know-how of how to even get to it. So I appreciate him for being open with us. I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of value out of this episode. Just hearing his story and how he came about and how he continues to excel and keep educating himself to become better at his craft, which is through different products or different exercises or different ways of programming and all that. So again, I appreciate him for his time. And without further ado, let's get into it. All right, man. Well, first off, I want to thank you for being here. Thank you for accepting the invitation.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate the time. But go ahead and share a little bit about yourself so people that don't really know you that are listening to you can kind of get an insight on who you are and kind of what made you to what you are now.
So, obviously my name is Theo, and I go by several different nicknames these days that are getting thrown around all over the place, goofy shit. But, what I do is, I'm a personal trainer / strength coach, fitness professional, whatever, people want to throw around these days. I've been doing so for about 7 years, and kind of what led up to that, it was actually kind of like an accident, or almost something that I wouldn't say accident, because I don't really believe in that stuff, but I kind of fell into it, and I never had like this lifelong expectation through my childhood, through my teenage years, and even into like my really early 20s that I was going to be a personal trainer. Like, it wasn't even on my radar. I grew up playing sports my entire life. I'm like, super competitive by nature, to where, it affects me in a big way. Everything is a competition for me, even, just small little things. And so, again, like, competitive sports was my life. That's all I did. I hated school. I was never good at it. All of my other siblings did pretty well in school. But I was kind of like the outlier. At no point ever in my life was I like interested in school. So like, all I wanted to do was like go to recess, play hoop, play soccer. That was it. So that carried me up into high school. I was really dedicated to basketball at that time. And still at that point, I was like, I'm going to go to college and play ball. Try to play overseas or something like that. And, so that was always on my radar. And it got to a point where, I had several things sort of pop up. In my high school years, I was diagnosed with Wolf Parkinson's White, which is a heart arrhythmia, to where, just the rhythm of my heart kind of gets affected by an electrical pathway or an extra electrical pathway. So I couldn't play my junior year for a significant amount of time. From my sophomore summer into going into my junior year. So, if you know anything about sports, you know that that's like a really, kind of critical time for a young athlete to kind of get, noticed, going into the next level. So I took about 6 months off of playing basketball. I wasn't able to play. I wasn't able to train anything. And at that point, that was kind of like my life. And so that really hit me hard. And then I decided that once I was able to get cleared and I was able to play, that I was really going to commit myself to it. I was going to knuckle down, do my schoolwork, go to class, all that stuff. And I did. And then popped up again my senior year. I was playing, and then I, and what happens is I kind of get this feeling in my chest, like, there's like a bunch of butterflies just, flying around in my chest.
Is it like a heavy chest feeling, or is it?
It's not like that. It's like, it literally just feels like, like my heart is beating so fast that it really just feels like, and it just feels like out of rhythm. Okay. And it doesn't feel like it's consistent. And so, and the best way for me to describe it to, my doctor was like, man, it just feels like a bunch of butterflies are just flying around in there. Like, like that nervous feeling that you get in your stomach, mm-hmm. Like when people describe butterflies in their stomach, right. It's kind of that same feeling, but like up here. So I knew that. I was like, man, I've been through this before. I almost didn't want to say anything because I just wanted to play so bad. So I was like, man, I know I have to say something. Last thing I want to be doing is be playing in front of 1500 people and, keel over. So,
right.
So went through that whole process again. And this time they considered it low risk. I went through a whole procedure, to where they stuck a catheter in me and they were essentially going to try to like zap away this extra like electrical pathway, but it was so close to a major pathway that it would have been more risky for them to go through with it than it would have been for me to not do it because they determined that I was low risk. They're like, probably not gonna die.
Okay.
So, and they cleared me to go play again. And then somebody from a rival school, I couldn't tell you the details of, exactly who it was or what exactly happened even to this day. But as soon as I got cleared to play, then somebody had sent an email to my athletic director. And it was me and then two other guys on my team. And we were kind of like the three major players, on our squad, and saying that they had pictures of us being at a New Year's party with alcohol. And so we were suspended for the rest of the season. We weren't going to be able to play for the rest of our season. Mind you, we're number one in the league. We have like a real shot at doing,
something
really, really well in state. We weren't favored to win by any means, but we were favored to do pretty well. And so then we had to go through this appeal process, blah, 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 and all that stuff. And colleges don't like to see that.
Right.
and even if you are innocent, it's just that, if your name is associated, with shit like that, it kind of, puts some red marking on your resume. So, after that, we got cleared to play. And then after that, going into college, I decided that I was going to go to a community college. And, I went through several other schools, within the state, talked to some other schools out of state to see if I could just like call them up and like, hey coach, my name is so-and-so, I played here and, this is what I'm looking to do. I would love the opportunity to come out and, kind of just walk onto the team and try out. And, so I did so, and, I really started to figure out that, man, this is at this level, it's really, really political. If you're not being highly recruited and you haven't been on anybody's radar, like essentially you got to go in there like Kobe Bryant and right. Kill the whole team.
Make noise, yep.
And a couple of teams I I did that. I murdered their starters. And then, you know, but it was that whole like, man, I already promised this person a scholarship. So like, man, you know, I can't really do anything for you. You know, and essentially telling me that I like he wouldn't be able to play me and a few other coaches. And I was like, man, like, you know, I'm not about that. Especially, you know, I had a bit of an ego at that point in my life. I felt like I kind of had something to prove, but like at the same time, like they should know that after that experience that they just went through with their star players getting crushed, that I should be playing. And that's how I felt. And so I went through kind of like this battle mentally of like, man, like this is not working out for me. You know, I'm not going to go to like some school out in the middle of nowhere, you know, and do this and not play. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I decided at that point, I was like, man, I'm going to, you know, I got to find an alternative. You know, basketball is not in my future. I had to come to terms with that. And it wasn't like an overnight thing. It was like culmination of like just signs and feelings and all sorts of stuff to where I was like, all right, well, man, now you got to find something else to do.
Right. Did you have, I mean, I can imagine, I can relate obviously where on the sports aspect where, you know, you're struggling with that. And then you have even rivals, right, that you know you're better than are getting offers or hooping,
yeah.
You know, somewhere else. So I can totally understand that mental battle of why them, right? And especially when talent is, I mean, it's like a big push for universities, obviously, to bring on the best ones. So why wouldn't they just bring you on knowing that you're better than somebody else, right? So
right.
So I totally understand how that mental anguish and mental just, you know, kind of suppresses everything else that you want to do. And then it's almost a feeling of like, is this the way it's going to be for everything, right? Yep. Like any walk in life. So at that time, did you have, I mean, even close friends that went to hoop somewhere else?
Yeah, I had, so the guys that I played with, they kind of went through that process. You know, we had, you know, our kind of star player at that point, you know, even he had to go through kind of the community college route. Mm. You know, and he was trying his hardest to kind of make it, you know, at least, you know, go play overseas and play some form of professional basketball. And that's what all of us did. Like, that's the group that I hung out with.
Right.
We all expected that. And then one of my, you know, oldest and best friends still to this day, went to the same college that I ended up going to this community college. And he ended up, playing ball. It was funny because the basketball coach was, I believe he was also the athletic director, for some time. But he was also a lawyer. So, the way this guy worded, you know, how he was giving my buddy his scholarship, it wasn't the most clear. It was actually a funny story because he goes to class, and I think it was something like, you know, they still kind of take attendance or in some classes at that level. His name wasn't called. He goes up to the instructor and is like, yo, like, I don't know if you just skipped over my name, but and they can see like who hasn't paid, you know, whatever, what's right. Happened. They're like, man, you got to go to the administration office. He does so. And without even letting my buddy know, the coach had pulled his scholarship and gave it to somebody else. And so it was just kind of that whole, you know, it was kind of that atmosphere that we found ourselves in. And he ended up, he continued to play because his parents could afford to pay for his classes and stuff like that. But he never got the opportunity that he really deserved. Mm. And, you know, even though I have a biased opinion, I know because we played with a lot of these guys at the high school level against him, mm-hmm. and we crushed him. Mm-hmm. And so, and especially him, and he was a big man and he just wasn't getting the play that he deserved. So yeah, we all kind of went through that. And you know, there was certainly, you know, at that point, there's a local school that you're familiar with, Rainier Beach, that, when we played, I believe they won the state championship that year, and they had 9 D1 guys. And just on their roster alone, 9 out of 12 went D1. And there were several other schools that we had played against that were really high-profile athletes, and they were highly recruited. And we would show up to tournaments and, like, hold these guys, you know, if they're averaging 26, 27 points, you know, we're shutting them down to, you know, 12, 14 points, you know. And so we were like, we were confident in ourselves, and we just felt like, man, like, there's no way that, you know, we don't get to the next level and really show that what we can do, right?
Right.
And so obviously things didn't turn out the way that we expected. And for me personally, definitely didn't turn out the way that I expected. And yeah, and so I decided to give it up, which was a really heavy decision at that point in my life. And being so young, that's all that my life really had been. And so to give that up was really, really difficult. And now I'm asking myself, what are you going to do next? Hmm. And the only reason I continued to go to school was because my mom had travel benefits. She worked for Alaska Airlines, and, you know, she retired after like 35 years, just a couple years ago. But all I had to do was take 12 credits, and I was able to fly wherever I wanted for pretty much for, you know, for sales tax. And so I was going to San Diego, and I was going over to Wazoo, and, you know, I was just flying, and every weekend I was going somewhere, and also working at the same time, doing a bunch of other things. Yeah, I was just trying to kind of figure myself out. And for a little bit, I was just trying to numb that feeling of, all right, you got to get your shit together and, you know, figure things out. So I was just kind of blocking that stuff out, going to the party, hang out. And I was just working dead end job after dead end job. I think within a matter of probably, so from 18 to 23, I probably worked like nine different jobs. Mm. I was working like 3 jobs at the same time.
What were you studying? I mean, was it just general? I mean, was it just like the first couple of years?
Just general classes. I took classes that intrigued me, like, you know, like evolution. I actually went to, when I would go to visit Wazoo, I knew some friends that had like a psychology class. I would go walk in with them and just sit in on the class. So it wasn't like, you know, like I wasn't learning, but at the same time, like I wasn't really applying it in a real way. So I was like, man, I can't make a job out of this evolution class. So like, what the hell, you know? And the school got tired of me flunking classes. So I got put on academic suspension for a year. And that's when I started working 3 jobs. And again, had no idea what I wanted to do. I ended up working at like UPS, LA Fitness, Safeco Field, all at the same time. And, you know, all these places were really kind of just like treating me like shit. There was no real expectations. Just right. show up, do your job. Don't know, like some of them, there's no way that you were going to get promoted. And then like UPS, I worked down in Georgetown, and that location, which I did not know, was like the hub of like, that's where like all the drug addicts kind of like they send all the drug addicts there. Right. And I don't know if they thought if I was a drug addict or what, but wasn't. And man, there's just guys like on heroin and all that. And dude, they're just going through withdrawals. Like, you know, I'm loading these packages with them, and this guy's just keeled over in the thing. He's just vomiting all over the place, shaking. And I'm just like, dude. And I'm working at from 10 p.m. to like 3 a.m. So it's just like the weirdest. I've never worked hours like that. And I'm in this strange environment to me. And I'm like, man, this is just not what I want to do for the rest of my life. And I was actually offered a promotion to be a supervisor. I was like, as soon as they offered me that, I was like, dude, I quit.
That was it.
It's like, I'm done. Yeah. 2 weeks, man. I was like, I'll give you 2 weeks and I'm out. And, after that, I showed up, back to community college because my year of academic suspension was coming up. And I was like, man, if you're going to go to school, like you got to do it for something that like you enjoy.
Right.
And, at the time I was reading this book, 'cause my brother was really trying to help me out. He was getting involved in real estate at that time. and he was really doing like a lot of the self-help stuff. And he gave me this book called Life by Design by Tom Ferry. And that book really kind of shifted my perspective, because I felt like I could relate to the guy. And, you know, I was like really at that soul searching, you know, point in my life. So I was like, man, you know, if I'm going to do anything, I got to do something that I enjoy. I got to be passionate about it. And I go up to the school, and there's just like this wall of like pamphlets of all the programs that they offer. And I'm
still
like,
still no idea what you wanted.
Still have no idea. I'm just looking. I'm just like, man, what jumps out to me? And I'm there for like, man, probably like 15, 20 minutes. And, you know, the in the administration office, like they try to help you as much as they can. Like, hey, you know, can I help you with anything? And I'm just like, I really have no idea. And she was like, well, you look like you're trying to figure something out. Do you want to sit down with the counselor? And I was like, yeah, maybe that's a good idea. And then I picked up the personal training pamphlet, and I was like, well, I like to work out. I like to train. I've been active my whole life. You know, maybe I give this a shot. So I emailed the instructor of the program, set up a meeting. And so I do that. And then as I got home, I was like, hold on, like what does the average personal trainer make? And so I Googled it, and the national average was like $22,000 or something like that, like a year. And I was like, of course I pick this. I pick this job to where you're making peanuts. Like, and you know, obviously we live in Seattle, so we live in this major metropolitan city to where you like you can barely pay for gas on $22,000 a year. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give it a shot. I was like, man, I'm the type of person who I kind of go to the extreme with things. So I felt, I was like, man, if the average person is doing 22,000, this is how I thought in basketball too. If the average player does this, I can do 5x that,
right?
You know, at least. And so that was just kind of my competitive nature. And I was like, you know what, let's just give it a shot. Let's see how it goes. And then, so my first real quarter in that program, I took a business of personal training class, and that's how I met Luca.
Okay.
So Luca, came in, and actually I was sitting next to Cody as well. That's how I met both those guys. And Luca came in to speak to the class, and I could relate to him. Ex-ball player, kind of went through this identity crisis of what he was going to do after playing basketball. And I just felt like he was talking to me. And I was like, man, if I do this, I'm going to be a coach at Vigor Ground. Mm-hmm. And then the further that I got through the program, I realized, I was like, man, like I've never been good at working for somebody else. You know, I've never really been in like really, really inspired to be like, man, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I'm going to work for this person or this company, and that's what I'm going to do forever. And so I was like, man, I want to open up my own gym. And I had that thought while I was in that program. And then, you know, I go to train at Vigor, and I jump in on a charity. I talk to Luca afterwards, and I'm like, hey man, like, I was in that class that you spoke to. I would love an internship. I'll do it, you know, like I'll do it for free. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't know that was mandatory at that time. I just offered for free. I was like, man, I don't expect to get paid or nothing. And so, and then he was like, man, like I'm kind of happy with my team right now. Like we're not really looking to expand. But you know, maybe, you know, in a few months we can talk about an internship. And I'm just like, man, like
at that time, had you gone to any other gyms, or was there even a personal trainer that you could say like, man, that's who I'm trying to be, or that's who I'm following, or anything like that?
No, because I knew that there was other gyms, and I knew that there was other small gyms, and you know, Cody I was really close to Cody at that time. So I was talking to him a lot, and, you know, he had already been at Vigor. as an intern. And so I'm like, you know, he was a little bit more connected. So I'm like, man, like, do you know of any other gyms? And, you know, and he was telling me about some, and I just kind of like look them up, and I'm just like, man, like, these guys' story is just so blah. Like, you know, like I don't relate to, I can't connect to it at all. Right. And I wasn't pumped about it. So I was also weighing some different options, but in the meantime, I was like, you know what? Like, man, I'm going to train here and I'm going to show this guy that, you know, he's going to hire me as a coach and he's going to mentor me, you know, to be able to help me, you know, open up my own gym one day.
Right.
And, you know, so at that time, you know, I was probably like 150 pounds and, you know, I trained for about what, eight or nine months and, put on about 35 pounds. Mm-hmm. And then, Luca came up to me, during one of my training sessions. And so I was in there every day and like staying and reading, and I wasn't even an intern there.
Right.
I just like wanted just to be around.
Right.
And, so he comes up to me after a training session and was like, hey man, we got to sit down and talk about your internship. And I'm like, fuck, dude, finally. Right. It's been 9 months.
Right.
And the funny thing is the week before that, or it might've been the same week that, I was also applying to jobs in San Diego. So a friend of mine had moved to San Diego kind of like on a whim. And he was living with another buddy that we went to high school with. And they were sharing a bedroom in an apartment. And so I have like probably like $500 in my pocket. And I'm like, man, like, I'm going to apply to some jobs and I'm going to see if I can get down there and I'll just sleep on the floor of, you know, and share this room with these guys and save up some money to where I can, you know, put a deposit on an apartment for myself. So I actually got a couple calls back, one from Nordstrom, one from a bank, and set up interviews. So I was going to use my mom's travel benefits to get me down there and because I could have, and then and do the interview. And then like right after I had set that up, that's when Luca had said, hey man, you know, we gotta sit down and talk about your internship. And then, dude, I didn't even give the other people like down San Diego, I didn't even give them a call back, like to say, hey man, I'm not coming. I was just like, fuck them. Yeah, just done. And yeah, so that's kind of how it unfolded. And then from there, man, I just, you know, like I've kind of put like my heart and soul into becoming a coach. I didn't actually realize, you know, how much of a difference that I was going to make and how much of an impact that I was going to have on my clients. Mm-hmm. There's just, you know, I wasn't even really thinking about that. I was just like, man, like, you know, if I could do this for myself, I could help other people do it. It was in a really, significant way. And, you know, from there, once I got that feeling and once I, you know, was communicating with my clients on that level, I really kind of just became hooked.
And I think that's an important point, right? Like even going back a little bit to where you say, you know, you were looking at other places or out of the gyms and there just wasn't a connection or there just wasn't, you know, something that kind of pulled you in. And I think a lot of people go through life without ever feeling that, right? So that's why they go and they feel like, well, it's just another job, or yeah, well, it's money to pay the bills, right? But that human connection or that feeling of just I belong is can really change everything. And then you push that and add on to it with like what clients, you know, what they feel for you and the change you've made in them. And I know just from personal experience that feeling is, there's really nothing like it, right? To where someone can kind of pour themselves into you for your well-being, right? And of course, yeah, you're getting compensated for it. I mean, that's obviously, you know, that's a given. But more importantly, it's like, I think fitness is one of those places or one of those industries where you can have a profound, like you can literally change someone's life.
Yeah,
And a lot of people don't maybe because they've never felt that, they don't believe it. Right. And when I tell them, obviously, you know, when I talk about vigor and even through these times, right, where we're going through this quarantine and we're one of very few gyms that are still, quote unquote, thriving, right?
Right.
Our clients are still, and I think it's because of that. I think it's because of that connection. And I think that's the missing link, not just in fitness, but in all industries, where if you don't have that connection or that care feel, then, I mean, in dire times like this, then obviously, you know, gyms are closing left and right, and we know about that. So,
right.
So I think that's an important lesson for people. And I always preach that left and right is just like, whatever it is you're going to do, you have to do it. There has to be something a little bit more than the money. Right. And let's be real, right. For fitness right now, you know, it's not like you're running to the bank with, you know, satchels of cash flowing out. You know, it's just, it's really the love of obviously the craft and really digging into the craft, and also the changes that you're making in people's lives.
Right. And I think statistically, you know, like investing in a gym is like one of the worst things that you could possibly do.
It's like, right? It's like right behind a restaurant.
You know, yeah, exactly. Like, you know, they're failing left and right. And even people who have been in business for 10, 15 years, you know, that we're seeing all over the world are having to shut their doors for good. But, you know, what I've also seen in my time, because I've been on several podcasts, I've talked to people, and you know, I've been at a lot of events where I've got to network with different people from around the country, around the world. And you get the feeling that their clients are, their members are really just a number.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of talking about the impact and the significance and the story behind, you know, individuals, it's more of like, man, you know, we have this many members, this is how much we do a month. And as soon as I hear that, like, I kind of just shut off.
Right.
Naturally, because it's not interesting to me. I don't really care what your numbers do. It's more about, man, like, what, like, I could tell stories every day for the next 2 years of the impact that, you know, we've made at Vigor. And right. That's probably lowballing it. Mm-hmm. And from each individual, from, you know, people who have had diabetes to being off of medication, people who have survived cancer and they'll get a cold or the flu and say, man, I bounce back faster now than I did before I was even diagnosed with cancer. How right. is that even possible? You right. know?
And some of the stories that I share.
With depression, anxiety, all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Some of the stories I share are even, you know, like everyday life stuff, right? Where, you know, I remember you had a client that, you know, I remember talking to him and for his, you know, he's a plumber, and for his, you know, what he did, like even just like bending over and getting up. And, you know, I remember talking to him and he's like, man, when I would get home after working all day, like I couldn't even really enjoy life, like with my kids, because I was just so sore or just so like out of shape pretty much. Right. And even those things are, to me, are a little bit more of what can connect to like a general population. Right. Cause, and honestly, you know, the thing against Vigor that we have against is, you know, people walk in there and they see kind of like the crazy workouts and all that, and a lot of people almost kind of like are scared and they shut off a little bit, right? But it's really like, I always tell people, it's everyday people that train there. It's not like we have nothing but like high level athletes or
right,
anything
right.
like that, right? But it's just this right. misconception of like, at 50 years old, should I really be able to move like that? Because it's not a natural thing, right? Or it's not just a given thing that normally, you know, even at 40, right? Like, should I really be training like an athlete at 40?
Right. And you know what, because I was on Cody's podcast recently too, and we discussed this a little bit, which was, you know, what is the why behind training? Mm-hmm. And you know, at first for me it was, you know, well, you know, I'm a skinny bastard and I you know, I want to put on muscle, and you know, I want to, you know, build my confidence, you know, just like every other guy who's, you know, 22, 23 years old. They want to be able to talk to women, they want to be able to be right. confident and stuff like that. And so you know, at that time I felt like, you know, like that's as deep as it went for me, which was so surface level that I quickly found out that, okay, well, this isn't sustainable. You know, like it really turned into kind of a job for me, The way I had to eat, the way I had to train, everything else, and what it ended up becoming, because I ended up actually getting hurt. And I tore my spinal erector. So for those who don't know it, it's a muscle in your lower back, right? So, you know, I tore that, and I really started to question everything that I was doing from a training perspective. And that's actually how I got into mobility. And, you know, people still ask me to this day, like, man, you know, like, I just don't, or they'll tell me, man, I just don't love mobility. Like, I can't really get into it. I'm like, still to this day, like, I don't love mobility. Like, it's not like the most fun. It's like not like the sexiest way to train.
Right.
But it's absolutely necessary, because my why is, you know, I want to be able to do the things that I love to do, which is play basketball. I've gotten into hunting, and I love shooting my bow, and I love being active, going fishing. I want to be able to do that stuff for years to come, late into like my 70s. You know, I want to be able to do that stuff,
right?
Because that's kind of what makes me tick. I love the experience that I love the experience of life, and you know, what I get to do when I do those things, and how that makes me feel. To me, that's so much deeper than saying, hey, I want to put on 20 pounds of muscle,
right,
and I want to look good in my clothes. Well, why is that even important to you? And I think that if you start to peel back the layers, you realize, like, oh, well, it's really not, it's more of like what I can do with my body at that point.
Right. And to get back to mobility, you know, I always tell, like, you know, it's to me, it's almost like warming up, right? Like, who really likes to warm up?
Yeah.
Right. Like, who wants to stretch and warm up and do, whether it's an active warm up or not, like, who, like, nobody really enjoys that. Right. Everybody just, right, let's just get to the gym and start lifting. But the benefits there are obviously, you know, it's a given of the ability to, one, use it as an active recovery method. Right. And also just to be able to move. I mean, that's like the word, and people are like, what's mobility? I'm like, man, the word says it. Like, the title says it, right? It's just
right,
to be just more mobile. So
right,
at what point did you really get into that? Or was it because you needed to start doing the mobility to recover from your injury and all that? And then all of a sudden you kind of just felt this, I wouldn't say passion or love for it, but to where you just wanted to learn more about it? Because I know now, you know, you essentially lead all the mobility classes and seminars and stuff like that at Vigor. But at what point did you say, man, I want to start doing this, like coaching this, instead of just, well, I know what the benefit is for myself.
So, well, really after I got hurt, I wasn't necessarily doing, you know, mobility practice, so to speak. It was more of, you know, I had to rehab that. And once I had done that, and still, even then I was acting like a bonehead, because it took me what should have taken 6 to 8 weeks took 6 months, because, you know, I would find myself feeling good one day, and then I would go and lift heavy. Mm. And so, then I learned from those experiences. And then, right at about the time that I really started feeling 100%, we had, John Wolf of On It, mm-hmm, come in, and he did a durability workshop at Vigor. We hosted it, I participated, and a lot of it is you know, body weight stuff, and, you know, some mobility drills. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was like, man, I have not felt this light and this loose in a long time, like since I don't even know when. And then I started practicing it every single day, because I wanted to kind of keep that feeling and kind of build, you know, some compound interest on that. And then I started looking more into, I was like, man, you know, where did these guys get that? I was talking to John, man, who would you recommend? Like, where did you learn this stuff from? How can I learn more? And, you know, I did a few others, a guy called Max Schenck, who created what's called 5-Minute Flow. I did one of his workshops. I ended up doing what's called FRC, functional range of conditioning. I still to this day plug in pieces of their system into the system that that we've created and that we use at Vigor. And so what really got me to teaching it was practicing it for myself and then seeing the results that came from it. So it wasn't necessarily like my physique was improved. It was more of how my body was functioning. And I was a lot more resilient. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have any nagging low back pain, nothing. And, you know, to me before that, and I know that you can relate because you played sports your whole life too, was, man, like if you have a sprained ankle, try to tell the coach that you're not playing on that sprained ankle.
Right.
Right. If you jammed your finger, try telling your coach that you didn't play, that you can't play because right. you jammed your finger. Right. You know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that that's not the best thing to do. Right. You should probably let it heal.
Right.
So to me, that's how, again, those habits learned early on also carried into my training because I would feel like, man, my back is tight and I would just keep going. Right. Like I would just keep training. So then, you know, practicing all this stuff for myself, and it probably took a couple of years of me doing this to then go like, man, all right, this is the system that we're going to use and we're going to plug it into a new class. We're going to do it. And we just started off with one day a week, started to build it up. At first, it was really slow. Then we added a second day. And, you know, so now it's been a few years of doing this class and the results that I kind of felt for myself, you know, now all of the people who are consistently coming to the class, it's crazy, man. People are telling me, man, I've stopped going to the chiropractor. Mm-hmm. I feel, you know, I've hurt my knee X amount of times. I feel a lot more stable when I'm playing ball or, you know, when I'm playing with my kids. I can walk down the stairs going straight down and not have to sidestep and hold the wall as I go. So it's just stuff like that where it's like, man, like these people were training for years, right? They're training, they're lifting weights, they're doing body weight stuff, but now implementing a different approach to, man, how their week looks when they are training, considering mobility being a pivotal or an essential role in what they do on a weekly or even on a daily basis, you know, they now start to feel the residual effects. And so it's kind of spread because people are now talking about it and like, man, this is interesting. And it's more than just getting into kind of weird sort of positions that you're not really used to. It's how you feel afterwards and the result of that. So that's how it happened for me. And like, I just feel grateful that, you know, this is something that not only am I teaching, I want to teach coaches to this same practice, because not only it from a business perspective, you're going to retain mm-hmm. more clients, you know?
Right.
So again, it's just opened up a lot of doors, but that's kind of what got me started with the whole mobility thing.
So for you, I guess, you know, if you were going to ask the question, like kind of going forward, are you using mobility as just like a cog in the wheel for your overall training, or is it something that you want to like start being a little bit more specific in training only mobility?
No. I would just say it's a modality, just like you said. It's part of the wheel. It's something that is necessary. And without it, yes, you can get away with training, but man, like, you know, how about feeling a lot better? How about optimizing the function and the control over your joints and reducing the risk of injury? Mm-hmm. So again, it's a piece. It's not the entire pie, right? It's simply a piece.
Perfect. No, and I think it's, you know, again, the knowledge side of it, right, is I think where a lot of people, again, just like warming up, right? They kind of just shrug their shoulders and until they actually go through it and experience it, and I think, you know, doing it consistently for a certain amount of time is obviously where the key is, right? Where you actually see the true benefits of it. But, you know, I think going forward, coaches need to I guess, see the value for themselves, right? Almost like kind of like how you did, right? Like you went through it, you saw the value in it, and then obviously you're implementing it now. But as far as just general, you know, coaches don't really know too much about it, I would say. Or even if they do, they just don't think people are going to be into it.
So, and this is the thing, it's just like, I'm sure every industry has some version of this, but you know, you'll see people, and it's kind of a gift and the curse of social media as well, because I love to post content, but how many other people are posting content about mobility who haven't truly been through, you know, the education,
right?
They simply copy and paste. Mm-hmm. And then that's kind of the struggle. And, you know, that the average person, you know, who is not really doing in the education as far as fitness goes, and they just want to go to the gym because they know that it's right for them, they might not really know the difference of what I'm preaching versus what somebody else is preaching. Certainly I try to do my best to kind of clear things up, but man, there's a lot of people out there who are just mimicking positions and exercises.
Right.
And to the trained eye, it's obvious, but if it's not the trained eye, if someone's just kind of looking at it, who doesn't really know what to expect or how to perform that, then they try to recreate it. And there's all sorts of stuff that's going on. So, you know, it can be a mess, but at the same time, I think that, man, like, you know, as a coach, you always have to do and just like any other profession, the moment that you stop educating yourself, you start to become more and more irrelevant,
right?
Essentially by the day,
right?
You know,
right?
And that's kind of just how you know, I take my responsibility as a coach is, man, you know, what would it be like if I were to stop everything and just take what I know and just implement that for the rest of my life? I don't really think that, yes, I could probably get away with it, but am I really doing, you know, my due diligence as a coach, and am I providing that service that I promised to give my clients?
Right.
I couldn't say yes.
And I think the question that I always ask people with, it, well, when we get asked, you know, as far as, you know, with running bigger and all that, is like, what's your like monthly growth, right? And I always take it two ways, where like the retainment of clients to me is the bigger picture, right? Because that means that they're bought into whatever it is that we're selling, right? Which our product obviously is training and make you feel better and, you know, about yourself and just live a better life. So I agree with you, you know, touching back on something you mentioned, it stuck in my head where people love to talk about like the number of clients, right? And like what their month to month growth is and all that. And I always kind of stump people when I say, okay, well, what's out of all the clients that you have, what percentage have been with you for at least a year, right? Or how many of them have been with you for at least 2 years or 3 years? And, you know, I can, you know, say that, you know, at Vigor, we've got clients, you know, that have been there for years, right?
Yep.
And I think, again, that's the testament of the continuous education that all the coaches there are putting in, right? And yourself with, and not only with just how to become just a better coach, but more of like, what other products can I offer my clients, right? That not just to offer a product, but because I believe in, and furthermore, because I've actually done it and I've seen the benefit, right?
So, and not only that, a lot of it too, what I've found out is relationship building. I mean, that is, right, that is so massive. And again, if your people come through the door and you don't work every day into kind of building that relationship, man, they're going to feel it. And that's right. Why, you know, retention isn't where it should be. And you're constantly trying to dump money into Facebook ads and stuff, mm-hmm, like that. And it's just kind of a revolving, because you don't really have any, mm-hmm, solid foundation of why those people should be staying in the first place.
Right.
So that's the tough part. And, you know, for me, like I feel grateful to be able to train the people that I'm able to train, because not only do I love coaching, but man, I truly love connecting with with each one of those individuals.
Right.
And everybody has a different story. And to me, man, like that's the most unique thing is every day is different. Stories right. constantly evolve. They change. And you know, it forces me to have to adapt mm-hmm. as a coach. You know, how you respond to certain things because, man, you know, everybody's trying to move onward. You know, and with that, schedules change, habits change. And so now we have to constantly, you know, be figuring things out and adjusting and you know, moving pieces around. And to me, that's kind of the fun part and the problem solving part. But you know, hearing also, you know, people talk about their experience, you know, from training being that vehicle that has kind of led them and has been a catalyst to improving every single aspect
right.
Of their life. And no matter what the government says, man, the training industry is essential. So
right,
yeah, whether they say it or not, man, we know it's true.
No, and I agree with that, the human connection part of it, right? And now, you know, kind of a perfect little segue into, you know, talking about coaching in La Tribu. That's what I've started to really appreciate is, you know, every day I'm on phone calls with different members from different parts of the world and different walks of life and I mean different situations, right? And I think it's, you know, it complements well with people that appreciate the like ever changing, you know, topics and subjects and situations and like it's called coaching for a reason on both fronts because for instance, with you, you're trying to get somebody from point A to point B and then C and then D, right? In like a growth pattern where with the accountability coaching, it's the same thing, right? Like you're here, you need to get here to be able to get to the long-term goal, right? Whether it's somebody that was trying to lose 50 pounds or somebody that's trying to get ready to just be able to play on a recreational soccer league, right? And just be able to perform, you know, and keep growing. I think that's the connection there. And for me, you know, I think the end goal is just trying to continue to gain as much knowledge as possible. And I think it goes, you know, we've had the conversations and I think it's the same for you, right? Like how do we continue push each other and challenge each other and our clients, right? To continuously move forward to where that's what really keeps clients around, right? Is when right. they know that you're invested and they know that you're continuing to grow personally, professionally, right? And all that is going to entail, like kind of circle back around and benefit them.
Right. And I think, you know, too, is understanding, you know, the culture and creating that and living that, you know, every single day. And mm-hmm. I think that we've done a good job of letting our clients know that each one of their stories kind of, you know, makes the story mm-hmm. of Vigor.
Right.
And I think that, you know, when they understand that, and I think it's proven in times like we're in now in such a weird, uncertain time that, you know, these people understand just how important, you know, not just training, but the relationships and the environment that they put themselves in right. every single day.
Right.
And without that, man, if you're confined at home, you know, how are you going to cope with that? So, right. you know, and I heard an interesting statistic, just within King County that, you know, overall crime has gone down, but domestic violence has like skyrocketed. Right. Right?
Yeah.
So how would that statistic be different if all of those people were in a positive environment, they were in something that they were involved in something that was bigger than just themselves, mm-hmm. but they felt that they had something to add to it.
Right.
And that they were also getting value back that, man, they're working on themselves every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I feel like, you know, that is again, you know, that's the big difference. That's kind of what separates us and what we do in this industry apart from a lot of others, because you know, to me that's priceless. That can't be replaced.
Right. No, and the statistics show, right? Like just if people don't have outlets, right? And like you said, I think it's there's a little bit more that adds to it when you have an outlet, but you're also, it's kind of like a two-way road. You're also receiving something back, right? Whether it's, you know, and we've said this, right? Whether you just go train at a gym and you walk in and walk out and yeah, you got your session in, but you didn't really connect with anybody. You didn't even, you know, laugh or joke around with anybody, and you come out and it's almost like sometimes you come out even worse than you went in.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Where, you know, I've heard the stories at Vigor, you know, where people show up and just the fact that, you know, somebody smiled at them or was joking with them or even just in a, you know, in a joking manner, like made fun of them. And then that starts kind of like, you know, like just, you know, ribbing on everybody going forward. It just changes their whole just complexion. Right. And even just the face, right. They come in, whether they're frustrated or whatever, and, you know, again, get put through the blender with the joking and all that. And then all of a sudden their demeanor changes. And then they're even excited to go work out now. Right.
Right.
And once the workout is done, then it kind of just completes their whole facet of being in the gym, and they leave, and they just leave better than they walked in.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
Perfect. So, where can people find you? As far as, I mean, obviously I'll put your handle and all that on the details, but.
Yeah, I like to keep things simple. So just at Theo Bui, you know, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. Those are kind of like my main channels. I'm working on a website now that has not been launched yet. But yeah, I mean, if you follow me on those platforms, then you know, you'll be able to see. So just writing a lot more content, shooting more content as far as videos go. So yeah, working every day just to you know, to be able to give free stuff to people who need it. And yeah,
perfect. Right on, brother. No, well, I appreciate you again. Appreciate you for taking the time and being on here. Obviously we'll be working together for some other projects going forward. And I just want to say, appreciate you again for the time and hopefully we'll have you on here pretty soon.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you. Thank you.
I said it before and I'll say it again. Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while. You could miss it.